Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe.
I almost forgot to unmute. Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the May 8th episode of Pub Talk Live, the live publishing talk show airing the second and fourth Saturday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern. I am your host, Sarah Nicholas. I'm a young adult author, board member and agent liaison for Pitch Wars, and a library event planner. You can subscribe to reminders via email by clicking on the link in the description so you don't miss a show. You can also follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Pub Talk Live. And if you'd like to support the show, you can find a link to the Patreon near the end of the video description down below. I am so close to my first Patreon goal of 25 supporters. So once that happens, we're going to have a monthly video Q&A chat with the Patreon supporters. So just a heads up on that. We are launching today a new format for Second Saturdays. So the first episode of Pub Talk Live of every month is going to be author journeys. And so we're going to be talking to an author about their journey to publication and since publication, all their different experiences with publication and writing and that kind of thing. So I hope you like the new format. Let me know if there's anything that we talk about that you or that we don't talk about that you'd like to hear us talk about in the future. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on my guest today. So we just have one guest for the author journey. So they are both my guest co-host and my special guest. So Gabby Justice is the author of Dog Girl, her YA contemporary romance debut. She is the mom to three dogs and one cat, which she posted pictures of on Twitter, if you haven't seen that yet. She lives in Florida with her husband and children. She spent most of her adult life writing editorial copy for local magazines after graduating from USF. So please welcome Gabby. Hello.
Hi.
I was so close to saying UCF just because I live in Orlando. I'm so used to saying those letters together.
Well, I went there too. I went to FSU, UCF, USF. Oh, wow. I went to all of them.
Wow. I went to UF, so we have it all our bases covered. Yeah. We have Jen here. Jen was peeking before we started, and Laura says, hi, Gabby.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. All right. So if you haven't voted in the viewer poll yet, make sure you go do that. The question in honor of our guest today is, do you have any pets? Because it seems like writers and pets go hand in hand. And I do have a preference for cuddly pets. So the poll demonstrates that. But I also ask people to reply with pictures of their pets. So you can go look at those. But don't get distracted. Come back to the show. and we'll talk about that question at the end. We'll talk about the results then. All right. We're going to go ahead and start with our news. Gabby, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Either one.
Okay. All right. So I'll start. America's oldest bookstore, continuously owned and operated by the same family, almost lost its building this year, but three dozen investors from the community banded together to outbid a cash offer and save the store. Warwick's Bookstore is the name of the place. And I don't know how to say this. I just realized Lahala?
I know.
Lahala, California. We're going to go with that.
Yeah. La Jolla? I don't know.
La Jolla?
Is that right? You're right. Yes.
Okay.
That sounds familiar.
Wait, if I was speaking Spanish, how would I pronounce
it? Yeah, I think you're right.
We'll see. I mean, maybe someone will correct us. Anyway, so Warwick's Bookstore has been in business 125 years. 70 of them in the same building that they've been renting from another family business. So as usual, at the end of the show, we're going to put the links for all the news items that we talk about in the description so you can read more about them if you want. And this article did make me cry a little bit, so just a heads up. But yeah, a bookstore owned and operated by the same family for 125 years. Basically what had happened was the owners of the building were given a cash offer, a pretty high cash offer, it seems like, to buy the building from probably a developer, I'm assuming, an investor of some kind. And so they called the bookstore owners and basically said, unless you can match this, they gave them some like ridiculous time frame, like a week or something. I'm going to accept the offer. And they didn't have the money, but they started talking to people. And so about 36 investors, La Jolla, thanks, Laura. Yeah, it's about 36 investors all went together, including the owners of the bookstores and their real estate developer. Like everyone kind of chipped in and gave them a, I think it's a 20-year lease with the option to renew.
Yeah, it's a very heartwarming story.
Yeah, always good to have some good news in the book the bookstore world.
Yep. Well, this one's not so great.
Sorry, you should have gone first.
So this one is Joshua Wolf Shank has resigned from the Believer Magazine and Black Mountain Institute following a Zoom meeting with a dozen staff members where he was bathing in a mesh shirt and stood up, mistakenly thinking his camera was turned off. Now, when I read further about it, he suffers from psoriasis or some sort of disease where he bathes a lot and tries to find comfort. So I felt a little bad for him,
but then we talked about it. This was covered by a lot of places. The link we have is actually from the LA Times. Actually, I'm going to try to find the other link that I'm about to talk about. And there was a literary agent who was speaking for him and said that he has, I can't remember.
And I can't remember
it. It's a chronic disease, that makes your body hurt. So I was kind of frustrated with that phrasing, with the framing of the story, because I have two immune disorders actually. And I was like, this is going to make people, able-bodied people, think that, oh, you can't trust disabled people working from home. But then it turns out he kind of just creates, not great environments for his employees, because a whole bunch of his employees wrote kind of an anonymous letter, open letter, detailing the uncomfortable work environment he's created for the past couple of years. And they were like, this is not outside of expected behavior for him. And of course, the big news media had already kind of moved on from the story, so they didn't really cover that. But I will grab that link too and make sure to include that with the links, because I mean, even disabled people know you don't bathe on a Zoom call.
Like, I mean, it's not, you know, just wait till afterwards.
It was a scheduled meeting, you know, he wasn't surprised or anything. So, but I didn't write it in the description that I wrote for Gabby to read, but everyone did see his junk, if you're wondering. Yes, that's what happened. In addition to just like having a laptop near a bathtub would just give me so much anxiety.
Right. Yeah.
Hi, Mira. Yeah. Glad you could join us. Gabby and Sarah, those names sound good together. Like we should do like a podcast. All right. I have good news. I swear I didn't do this on purpose. The next piece of news is some fun news. Former Pub Talk Live guest and my friend, Ashley Hearn, is heading up a new YA imprint at Peachtree Publishing Company called Peachtree Teen. It's going to focus on, quote, fresh, empathetic storytelling that empowers teens and inspires conversation. The line will launch in May 2022 with The Ghost of Rose Hill by R.M. Romero, who I've also hosted at the library before. So this news item is just full of people that I know, but very exciting. Ashley left Page Street last year to join Peachtree, and now she is opening a new teen line. Okay, I see y'all. So Laura said, Sarah, no more projects. Jen said, Sarah's not allowed to entertain the idea of any new podcasts. I know. This is not them. This is me like saying I shouldn't be doing more projects, but I just love podcasts so much.
I called this a podcast for the longest time, but this is YouTube. So is it not a podcast? Yeah. It's a live. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's a YouTube show. There are people who do video podcasts, and I think like this would be similar to a video podcast, but I don't think of it that way, but it is syndicated as a podcast. So I strip the audio from the video and publish it. So if people want to listen instead of watch, they can.
Okay.
But I don't edit it at all. So it's not a polished podcast. It's just the audio pulled straight from the video. So yeah. Oh, you have some heartwarming news for us.
Me?
Yes.
Okay. I have, yes. Okay. The children of poet Lucille Clifton have bought the house their parents lost in foreclosure in 1980. They are doing repairs and reopening it as the Clifton House, a space for emerging and established artists and writers. This was truly, I cried reading this story.
Me too.
I know. it was wonderful. I mean, they lost the house, and then the daughter bought it back, and they're redoing it to open it up to fellow authors, and it just sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the link we're going to give to you later tonight is from Harper's Bazaar. And so it's less of a newsy post. It's more of like a kind of in-depth post, and they weave in lines of her poetry that are relevant to the story. It's a well-written story. So definitely check that out, and also have a tissue ready.
Yeah. And it just to open your house up to strangers like that. I mean, I have children, and it comes from the daughter's perspective that maybe the mom felt a little awkward that strangers were in her house, but at the same time, she knew there was a need for that, and she provided it. Special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's some great news. All right. More good news. We have a lot of good news this week. Berkeley is reissuing three romance novels from Stacey Abrams that have been out of print: Rules of Engagement, The Art of Desire, and Power of Persuasion. Were originally published under the name Selena Montgomery, which is her romance pen name. But also, CBS is adopting another of her novels, Never Tell, for TV, and Abrams will be an executive producer. So Stacey Abrams is a very busy woman right now. Berkeley acquired the rights to them, I guess, late last year. So
that surprised me. I didn't know she had written.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
I think it was going around the romance industry for a while. They did this big fundraiser, not Stacey Abrams, but some romance authors. They organized this fundraiser called Romancing the Runoff, where they fundraise a whole bunch of money for the Georgia runoff, you know, the senator runoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And she donated some signed copies of her books, and it was like one of the most like sought after items in the auction. But then she was also on, I can't remember what show is one of those like jokey news shows. You know what I'm talking about. The like news, comedy news shows or whatever. And she talked a little bit on that. So you'll be able to read those. And also the other part of it is like, Romancing the Runoff raised a lot of money. Laura said, I think it was about $250,000. Mm-hmm. It was quite a bit of money. Whenever people found out about them, they were like, the paperbacks anyway, were going for quite a bit, like on eBay.
Yeah.
Because they were out of print. So
it's like $600 or something for a book. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So now you can get a new shiny copy.
Well, I have Jason Reynolds and Mo Williams. Did I pronounce that right?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's spelled funny. are part of a special celebrity edition of the Show Antiques Roadshow. Jason's episode aired this week, and Mo Williams will air on the 17th. And I guess you're, you know, Jason pretty well.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of him. He gave me a hug once. So in my head, we're best friends. But no, I don't really know him that well. But I do. I love him. I love everything he does. And I am friends with Danielle Clayton, who is friends with him. But yeah, he's great. He's great. I haven't watched the show yet.
I haven't seen that show.
So I don't know what it is that they, what item they evaluated for him, but yeah. I just thought that was fun.
That's, yeah, no, I am not familiar with that show. I don't watch too much TV, but.
Laura said, oh, the Romance and Runoff was almost 400K. So she corrected herself. Jen said, I'm such an Antiques Roadshow fan. I'll have to hunt for those. Yeah, make sure you hunt for those. Jason is fun. All right. So the Mystery Writers of America announced the winners of the Edgar Awards last week. Check out the link in the description after the show ends for the full list of winners. Alyssa Cole won, I think, paperback, best paperback. That was the only author that I really knew who won. I feel like last year I knew like almost every winner.
I think Colette Bancroft won.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's a local Times, Tampa Times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Cool.
I know that because she wrote a little article about Dog Girl.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
We got connections all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. She won The Bite, Tampa Bay Noir by Colette Bancroft.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was like a special, the category is like special something. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's always fun. There's like so many awards all the time, and there was a women's prize finalist list announced this week too. I didn't include it in the links though, but The Vanishing Half was on it, and I feel like The Vanishing Half has been nominated for like every award this year, so I'm really gonna have to listen to it. Listen to it because it'll be an audiobook. If I
do. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, it's good. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you read it?
Yeah, I did. I listened to it. Like, nice. It's good. It's a really good book. Yeah. I was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Laura said, Gabby, I love your dog picture behind you. Oh, yeah. I saw the same thing.
It's a gift from my oldest son for Christmas.
Yeah. Cute. Super cute.
And then we have The Guardian reported that children read more books during lockdown this last year. Not only that, but they were reading longer books of greater difficulty, and more kids said they enjoyed reading. The article says that having more reading time gave kids the chance to immerse themselves in books. So we've been talking about during the pandemic, the numbers for book sales for kids reading has really grown. If one good thing can come out of this pandemic is that kids are reading. People are reading. I can attest to this. My daughter in college, here I am a writer and my kids don't read that much. And so my daughter's finally reading. She's like, oh my God, Mom, have you read Colleen Hoover's Verity? And I'm like, no, I haven't read that yet. So I read it. And then we were talking about it. I was like, oh, this is great. So I'm happy that the pandemic has forced her to stay home during college and read books. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting article. It's from The Guardian again. So it's another one that I recommend you read. So that's three today. Usually I don't have this many that I recommend you read. But it was really interesting. And the person that they're talking to that says, you know, that having more reading time gave them the chance to immerse themselves is like, so maybe we should consider giving kids more reading time, you know, at school and that kind of thing. And I had like a weird thought because I was a huge reader as a kid, obviously, but I think part of it was I spent every summer at my grandmother's house, and she lived in the country, and we literally got like two TV channels, and there's not a lot to do. Like, you know, there's no video games or whatever. And so I read a lot. I also rode go-karts a lot because we had go-karts. We just had like a field that someone had like plowed a track through. But I had a lot of reading time. And so I did a lot of my reading then.
And I think a lot can be said for letting kids choose what they want to read. You know, they might, instead of being forced to read something that they're not interested in, it seems that these kids were given the chance to read whatever they wanted, and they, that made it more something they enjoyed better. So
yeah. All right, sorry, I'm back. I clicked the wrong button and accidentally left the studio for a second. Yeah, like Laura said, I was the kid who would rush through her schoolwork to have free time to read at school. I was the kid who read in the back row of class. But I also had like 100 in every class, so teachers let me. School is not very challenging for me up until a certain point. Yeah, Mira said, choice is so key. I hate being told what to read. Yeah, I hate it being told what to read. It is, yeah. I'm a big, obviously a big proponent of letting kids read what they want to read. And I think we do crush a lot of readers in school by making them read books that they don't care for.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Jen had said earlier, anytime an author includes the award-winning line on their website, I always want to ask them what awards they've won and for which books. Yeah. So Kelly Garrett, who's like a friend of mine who's been on the show, the problem with her is she's won almost every like mystery award there is to win. And so she had a book deal announcement that's coming out on Monday, but I've seen it. And it says Agatha and Anthony award-winning author. But I'm like, what about all the other awards? Because she has so many. yeah. All right. Where are we at? Okay, last piece of news for y'all, I think, unless,
yes.
Yeah, okay. The Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, SIFWA, the Authors Guild, the Horror Writers Association, the Romance Writers of America, Sisters in Crime, Neil Gaiman, Chuck Wendig, and more organizations and authors have formed a joint task force to put pressure on Disney to pay the authors whose work they acquired when they acquired Lucasfilm in 2012. And this may seem like very specific to Star Wars, but I think it's something that everyone in publishing should be paying attention to right now, because basically what happened is Disney acquired all of Lucasfilm's property, including the books, and they are trying to claim that they acquired the assets but not the obligations mm-hmm. of the contracts, which obviously is a huge problem for publishing, because it basically, if you know, they were able to establish this precedent, any publisher could get out of paying their authors by selling to another publisher. Mm-hmm. So we don't want that to happen.
Mm. No.
yeah. This there was one author who this kind of started last year with him, and he's been paid now, but SIFWA throughout that process realized that there were several other authors who were not being paid. And so they've all these organizations plus others, there are more too, have banded together to kind of put pressure on Disney to pay their authors, which is good thing.
Mm-hmm. It's such a long process that years pass, so you can't forget about the guy in the beginning, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully they're successful. I love seeing Neil Gaiman in that list. Yeah. All right. Yeah, it is scary, Mira. Mm-hmm. It is. All right. So now we're going to switch to the interview portion of the show. So if you've seen the show before, I usually, on the regular episodes, we'll have a guest co-host and a special guest. But for the author journeys, the authors are both, essentially. But you don't have to interview yourself. We're just going to switch to me interviewing you now. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Gabby and her work and her books. And if y'all have any questions for her, you know, you can drop them in, but I have a lot of questions for her. So let's start kind of at the beginning, like when and why did you decide that you wanted to be an author?
Well, I will give you the short version. Really about 11 years ago, I would say. I thought about this a little bit. And definitely about 11 years ago, because in high school and college, I was into drama and acting. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up graduating with an English Lit degree and sort of found my love for books at the end of my college career. And then life happened and my husband and I had a business and I raised children. And then I decided that it was time for me when the kids became teenagers and I hadn't really accomplished my goals. And so I sat down and decided that I was going to make time for myself to write that book that I had promised myself I would write.
Awesome. So before Dog Girl, you self-published two paranormal romance novels. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, I love fantasy. I was reading Harry Potter. I was reading Twilight. I was reading Hunger Games, Divergent. That realm fascinated me, and I was helping my daughter with a Civil War paper, and all of a sudden I was like, it just fascinated me that these people didn't die. I mean, just this horrible war, and I got to thinking, well, what if they were immortal? And they were going to fight for the country and they weren't dying because they were immortal. And it just tumbled from there. And I wrote Firstborn and First Awakened all about a secret society of immortals.
Cool. And you decided to, did you try to query it or did you just decide to self-publish?
No, I was very, I guess, naive, and I wrote the book and, you know, thought it was great. And then I went off to Atlanta Writers Conference and met up with agents and listened to panels and editors and found out that I had a lot of work ahead of me. And then I joined a critique group and I kept throwing the chapters at them and they kept critiquing me. And I queried. And I guess I don't know how many people I queried, but it was probably a year's worth of querying. And finally, one of my friends in the group said, it doesn't need to be perfect. Just go for it. Self-publish, go for it. So I did. And I guess I'm kind of a hands-on person. And I learned, instead of reading, some people learn through reading lots of books. I learned from just diving in and it was a good experience. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot.
Well, you said you and your husband had a business before, so you kind of were comfortable with the business aspect of it, which I think a lot of writers aren't at the beginning, right? So that probably helped you for sure. Oh, Mira said Firstborn is a fan.
Oh.
Yeah. So can you share with the viewer some of the an important lesson that you learned while self-publishing? Like, do you have any tips for viewers who are considering self-publishing?
I highly recommend it. I mean, if you're a take charge kind of person, it's really easy these days too, because you've got Ingram Sparks, Amazon. It's Mira helped me a lot. I have to admit. Okay. Nice. She's my fan out there, but she's great. And it's easy. I have to say it is pretty easy these days. Well, when I started, it was CreateSpace, which is now gone, but now it's all Ingram Sparks and Amazon, and it walks you through every step of the way. I've been out of it for about 5-6 years now, so I'm not exactly sure what it's like these days. But when I did it, it was CreateSpace, and it wasn't that difficult. Mm-hmm. So I have to say, yeah.
I do want to take a second to like plug my podcast, because we just had a episode that was really relevant to this topic. So Queries, Qualms, and Quirks is my podcast that asks published authors to share their query letter and their path to publication. And the episode that came out this week was with Abby Vandiver, who's a mystery author who started self-publishing and then went into traditional publishing and continues to be a hybrid author. And she shared a lot of insights about both self-publishing and traditional publishing. So if you are interested, go check that out. All right. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit. What did your journey from there to kind of traditional publishing Dog Girl look like?
Well, I guess that's what I'm trying to lead into, is that because I self-published, I was a member of Tampa Writers Group. And because I had self-published, they put me on a panel. And on that panel, so I could explain my journey, but on that panel was Sharon Bel Castro, who was an agent. So she was sitting next to me, and we were, I was winging it. They were asking all those questions. Like, I don't know. I just did it. But I got to meet Sharon. And so I think that if you just put yourself out there and you go for your dream and you try the best that you can, situations pop up. I wouldn't have met Sharon had I not self-published. I wouldn't have met her. And we just became friends. We didn't even become agent client. I just got to know her on that panel. And then I saw her. I was trying to sell my book. So I would go to Tampa Bay Times, did a book fair. And she showed up and we talked. And you meet, it's networking. It's just meeting people, talking to people, being yourself, being kind. And it just all spirals from there.
So then you wrote Dog Girl and you queried her?
Yes. So then I was writing Dog Girl. So I ran into her and I had already written Dog Girl. So I asked her, she wouldn't take my self-published stuff. She just wasn't comfortable, or that wasn't whatever. But I said, hey, I've written this young adult contemporary romance. Would you be interested in possibly reading that? And she said, yes. So because I had met her, we had talked, it's networking, meeting people, just becoming comfortable. I mean, I'd already queried a million people before. Do you hear that noise? Do you hear that? Or is it, no? Just heard a funny noise. But I had queried Dog Girl, but it's different when you're just an email. You know, when you meet someone face to face and you, that makes all the difference in the world, I think. Sometimes you get lucky and your email gets picked up, but if you're just a blip on somebody's memo email, it's a lot easier to get passed up than if you've met somebody face to face, if you had a conversation with somebody, maybe you've gone, had a drink, or been to a conference or something, they'll remember who you are. And so, yeah. So she agreed to read Dog Girl. And that was fabulous.
And then, so she offered representation, obviously, right?
Well, okay. Oh. So
sounds like there's a story there.
Yeah. She read it. She liked it. She kept coming back to me and saying, do this. The voice isn't there. This isn't there. You need to fix that. Maybe I had a lot of things happening to Kendall. Instead of Kendall being in charge, things were happening to her. Like her, and I didn't realize that at the time. Like, oh yeah, I understand what you mean now. But Kendall was just going along and things were happening to her. And Sharon's like, no, Kendall needs to be in charge of the situation. I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So it's all a learning experience. And we worked back and forth probably many months, maybe even close to a year. And it kind of got comical because I was still querying other agents, but yet it was working. And then I thought to myself, okay, are we an agent client relationship? What's going on here? So I finally asked her, I'm like, are you representing me? Because I don't know what to do. Should I be querying other agents? What am I doing here? And she's like, no, no, we're, yeah, let's. So we finally, when we worked out the manuscript to where she felt it was good enough to be submitted, then we signed as official client agent. So that's how that happened.
All right. So as an author who's about to go on sub for the first time with my agent, because my first two books were actually exclusive, what was being on sub like?
It's horrible. No, no, it's just the waiting. It took a year for Dog Girl to find a publisher. And I remember she called me. I was driving to Miami to go see the Rolling Stones. I'd never seen the Rolling Stones before. And I was like, going to see the Rolling Stones. She said, and she's, I think she texted me like, I'm going to call you at 4 o'clock. And then my back of my mind, I'm like, oh, she's going to drop me. My book isn't sold. And she was calling to tell me we had a publishing deal. So I was very happy. But I have a book out on submission right now. And she sent me an Excel spreadsheet of who she's sent it to and who's rejected it, who still has it, who hasn't even looked at it yet. So, it's, you know, it's hard. It's your baby. It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks. I guess like I say, that's my first time on submission. I technically have been on submission before, but without an agent, and I had three co-authors, and we were targeting like small romance presses, and I was very confident in the project. It turned out well. We got like seven different offers that we had to choose from, but
Great.
So, it's different, you know, cause it was like a very specific situation, but anyway, all right. I'm just like spouting my own nerves here now. All right. So you use a pen name for your YA, Gabby Jess is a pen name. What went into that decision and how did you choose the name?
Justice is my maiden name. And I really like Justice. I got lucky and married a man with a good last name. So that was good. Because I love Justice. I was like, I don't want to get rid of Justice. Mm-hmm. So then when I could get a pen name, I'm like, okay, somehow I got to work Justice in, whether it's a first name, a last name. So it ended up being the last name. And then Gabby, my married name is Gabe. So I just kind of tweaked it and made it Gabby with an I. And I originally, when I self-published, I was going to do Gabby Justice. But I went to these Atlanta conferences and people would say Gabby and I wouldn't even acknowledge their presence. And I'm like, okay, I can't do this pen name thing. I just can't do it. But then when I went from paranormal self-published to YA published, we decided to do the pen name and now I've gotten much better at it. Mm-hmm. Now Gabby kind of seems like an alter ego, cool little person.
Yeah, it takes a little bit to get used to it, but then because I self-publish romance under a pen name too, and sometimes when I'm doing a lot of work under that name, I like accidentally sign emails with my pen name. You get a little too used to it.
My sign is Gemini, so I'm supposedly split personality anyway. So I'm like, okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. I'm Libra. I don't know what that means. All right. So can you tell us what happened after the book deal was signed? What did the press process look like from your end? How was your experience?
I was excited. She sent me, the publisher sent me all sorts of forms to fill out. And I felt part of a community. It was enjoyable. Everything was great. They did a few more edits, although Sharon and I had done so many edits that it wasn't too much edits. They kind of did like sensitivity that kind of a sensitivity edit, because there's some touchy subjects in it. And so we didn't want to offend anybody and I didn't want to hurt anybody. And so there were a few things that needed to be tweaked as far as that goes. They asked me a few questions about how I felt, if I had an idea about the cover. But pretty much they took control. And but the problem was, see, I was set to publish October 2020. So March 2020, the pandemic hit and everything. I mean, it was just for the longest time, I wasn't even sure if I was going to get published because everybody was closing down. Everybody was scared. I mean, it's a small independent publisher that I'm with. It's not like a huge name or anything. So I could have got dropped. I was like, please don't drop me. Please don't drop me. And I think I might have been the one of the last books of her publishing house to be published before she had to say, okay, we're going to take a pause because of the pandemic. We have to reevaluate. It's a scary time. So I got lucky and squeaked in there right at the very end.
All right. So my Patreon supporters can submit questions ahead of time for our guests. So this question is from Lodestar. And he asks, how did you find time to promote Dog Girl with the schedule of three competitive tennis players?
Well, so Dog Girl probably came a little bit later. They were grown. Not quite grown, but my oldest son was already in college. But I had a laptop. I purchased a laptop. I took it everywhere in my car. Early mornings, I forced myself to get up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning before the rest of the house woke up. And I took my laptop everywhere. So when they were practicing their tennis, you know, and normally a lot of times I would just sit on the patio and watch them play tennis and I would gossip with other tennis moms or whatever. So I stopped that. I just sat in my car with my laptop and I focused. I knew this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to change my life. I wanted to write a book. And I forced it to happen. Take every little ounce of time you can get. And it went towards my book.
Were you at the same time, were you still writing copy for magazines?
No.
Oh, okay. Those were different times.
That was like right after graduating college. So,
So, do you plan to continue self-publishing or do you think you're done with that?
I don't know. I think I'm done with it, but who knows? I mean, I'm very happy.
If an idea strikes or something.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I'm just writing and submitting. And if I write something that nobody picks up and I want the world to read it, then I'm going to self-publish it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it is time for the question that I ask all of my guests. So I'm going to just go ahead and ask you, what is the most important book you've ever read and why? With, of course, you defining important however you would like.
And I thought a lot about this question. And I have to say, I'm going to pick a book that is important to me because it sort of transitioned my life. And that book is Twilight. Because Stephenie Meyer she wasn't like this iconic, you know, you put her on a pedestal author that you couldn't reach out to. Like, she seemed like a real person, an approachable person, and she wrote a book. And so at that point in my life, I hadn't reached my goals. Like, I had told myself when you're a kid or whatever, I wanted to write a novel, a book, and I hadn't done it yet. And my kids were growing up, I was getting older. So it was just kind of that book where I'm like, well, if she did it, I can do it. Those were the kind of books we were reading at the time because my kids were preteen teen, we were all into the vampires and the Harry Potter, and I don't know, it just kind of gave me a kick in the pants, and I don't know, it just felt like I loved the series, and then I went on to read much more series in the fantasy realms and the paranormal realms, and I love all that stuff, and so that was kind of a turning point in my life when I read that book. So
awesome. Mm-hmm. Laura said vampires forever.
Yeah, I know. I love vampires.
All right. So we're going to do the audiobook of the week now. And so I'm just going to bring that up real quick. There it is. Okay. So it's The Initial Insult by Mindy McGinnis, mm-hmm. read by Lisa Flanagan, Brittany Presley, and Tim Campbell. And Tim Campbell's role in this is so good. It's not a spoiler. Okay, yeah, it's not a spoiler. He is the panther that you see on the cover.
I see it. Yeah.
So I bet it was a really fun role because it was obviously not written in kind of like human cadence, right? But yeah, anyway. So this is what the publisher said. The Initial Insult. In the first book of this duology, award-winning author Mindy McGinnis draws inspiration from Edgar Allan Poe and masterfully delivers a dark, propulsive mystery in alternating points of view that unravels a friendship forevermore.
Forevermore.
Yeah, but a little bit more about it is it's this town called Amontillado. You know where that influence comes from. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of those small towns that has these families that have been around forever, and like family name is like everything, you know. And so one of the main characters is a girl who has belonged once to one of these old families, but one night it's younger, like sixth grade or something, her parents disappear. So her best friend comes to her house upset about something, and then she decides she wants to go home, and so her mother goes to take her home, and her parents are never seen again, and her best friend is found by the side of the river, wet, but there's no trace of the parents, right? And so the other point of view is that best friend, and so they're in high school now, and it kind of flashes back to like these points in their relationship where they kind of fell apart. They're not friends anymore. Like the friend who was found by the river is part of the popular crowd. Mm-hmm. And the other girl she's had to move in with her grandfather who runs a wildlife. I don't know what you call it. He's basically like Tiger King kind of guy, right? Like it's like a sketchy wildlife place.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the panther comes in. And, yeah. And so she thinks that her friend knows something about how her parents disappeared and is just not telling. And so she develops a plan to get her friend to tell her. And it's very dark and twisted. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really liked it.
Yeah.
And the ending, though, like, the ending is stressful. I'm so glad it's a duology because I was like, I need to know what happens after this. Yeah. Anyway, recommend that one. Oh gosh, they're talking about vampires. I hadn't seen the comments for a little bit. So yeah. All right. So let's do the viewer poll. I haven't shared yet. So give me just 1 second. I have to share the poll. Where is it? There it is. All right. It's coming up now, maybe. No. All right, cool. I have to open on my other screen to see. So we have, it was funny because I looked at this last night. It was like 24% to 26% of each. It was like right even. But we have a slight advantage, one or more cats.
Yeah.
31%. One or more dogs at 26%. 22% said they have a combo of cats and dogs. That's both of us here, and me.
Mm-hmm.
We're both in that category. And 21% said no or other pets. And then I asked people to send me pictures too. So I'm gonna scroll through a couple and see.
Oh, there's one. They're my babies.
This poor. Oh gosh. I don't know what I did.
I was surprised that there were more cats than dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you do hear writers talking. These cats just have like some serious personality going on. That's Karen, who's a pubber, a regular on the show. Look at these. Oh gosh.
Yeah, I have my cat because of my son. He brought him her back from Gainesville when he was interning and he was a stray. So.
These beautiful babies.
Aww.
Yeah, there are a lot more. So if you want to check it, you can go and click on that and see all the replies. All right. So Gabby, before we say goodbye, do you want to tell us a little bit more about Dog Girl in case people are interested in checking it out?
Well, okay, funny story. So I one of the awards that I won, it said that, what did it say? It said, did not, like the synopsis didn't quite explain the story. So I thought, oh, well, that's not good. But, so I guess I want people to know that it's a love story. It's definitely a YA romance. There are a lot of dogs, obviously, and if you love dogs, you'll love it. But there is a plot, and there is suspense, and there's the kids going on an adventure. They have to kind of fight a dog fighting ring. Oh. So yeah, it's exciting. It's there's a lot more to it that meets the eye, and it's a journey of a young girl that struggles from anxiety, and she has to conquer her. That's kind of how it all started. I definitely wanted to write about. I had a daughter who had a lot of friends with so much stress and anxiety. It was such a young age. It surprised me. These girls who were strong and beautiful, and she played tennis. So a lot of them were tennis players, and they just seemed so well put together and strong, and yet they fought these demons inside. And because I'm older and a mom, I wanted to shake them and go, oh, it's going to be okay. But, you know, I mean, it's a struggle, and I wanted to write about that. So I think she hopefully conquers that as best as she can, because you don't really, you live with it, I guess, and you do the best you can.
Cool. It's related. Last night I had a bit of an epiphany about my own book that my agent now has. That's the one that's about to go up on sub. And I originally started it. I wanted to write about a girl who does battle bot competitions in high school because I'm a mechanical engineer. I did a little bit of battle bot work. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun, happy story about, you know, a girl does battle bots. There's going to be a romance, whatever. Turns out I wrote a story about the pressure of like being a capital S smart kid in a poor family. And I didn't even really realize it until last night when I was like going over some final edits. I was like, Sarah, what have you done? Like, this is supposed to be a fun robot story. And like, the main character has anxiety, like undiagnosed anxiety. So for her, the big win for anxiety is she gets a diagnosis. Like she realizes it. I mean, she, you know, is brought to realize that this is not how she has to live her life, basically.
Right.
Yeah. So
that is kind of funny how characters take on their own lives, like within your mind. They don't always behave.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, well, I'm working my traumas out on the page again, accidentally. Yeah. All right. Gabby, thank you so much for joining us. It was great talking to you today. If you want to find out more info about Gabby, her website and social media links are in the description, so you can check those out. And also link to Goodreads and Amazon as well if you want to check out Dog Girl.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. All right, bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like and subscribe right there so you don't miss another episode, and tell your friends because that's how they find out about shows like this. You can also subscribe via email via the link in the description, or follow on Instagram and Twitter. The Patreon is also in the link in the description. Thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. You'll see their names at the end of the show. I just really appreciate everything that y'all do. And we have some new supporters this month, so thank y'all so much. Coming up, I just want to let you know, on Tuesday, I'm doing a workshop on choosing a publishing path. So if you're interested in deciding between self-publishing, traditional publishing, this is a class that I developed to give people an honest discussion about the advantages and disadvantages of both, because I don't think that there's a one size fits all solution. And a lot of times when you go to these classes, they are kind of skewed in one way or the other. So the latest episode of Queries, Qualms, and Quirks featured mystery author Abby L. Vandiver. It was a great episode. The upcoming one for next week features a fantasy author. And she has a really interesting story. It has a bit of a plot twist ending. So make sure you tune in for that. It was also one of the most fun episodes I had recording. We laughed a lot. So tune in for that on Thursday on your podcast app. It's also here on YouTube if you prefer to listen that way. We're still doing the Wednesday write-in. So every Wednesday at 8 p.m., me and Bess are going to be here helping you get some work done, helping you get a little socializing into. The last Wednesday of May, I have to be late, so Kelly Garrett is going to be joining us too, so make sure you catch her. And then on May 17th, I have Ancient Chat Live with Jemisco Chambers Black. The next Pub Talk Live is going to feature a Big Five publishing assistant director of publicity. So we're going to be talking all kinds of publicity and stuff. So thanks, Laura. Laura said, I love our Wednesday write-ins. Thanks. I do too. That's where I get most of my writing done. Don't tell anyone. All right. I think that's it. Everyone stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and we'll see you next time. And I'm going to put the Patreon supporters' names up, and we'll thank you all so much. Bye.
If you're enjoying this show, please check out my other podcast, Queries, Qualms, and Quirks. Queries, Qualms, and Quirks asks published authors to share their successful query letter and discuss their journey from first spark to day of publication. I interview authors of all genres about how they got started writing, getting their book deal, and their experiences with publication. Search for it on your favorite podcast app.